Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode. Hey everyone, welcome to Rue. Today, we're chatting with someone who really carved her own path. Our guest grew up a Singaporean Punjabi in Vancouver, Canada, feeling different and doing things her own way. She made some unconventional life choices, such as hosting a TV show, doing music videos, and marrying someone outside of the culture. She even moved continents to gain her own independence, becoming a visible South Asian woman who faced a lot of public and personal judgment. She's here to share the ups and downs of her journey and how she ultimately found her own powerful truth, self-acceptance, and healing along the way. You're going to love this conversation with Shireen. Welcome to the show, Shireen.
Thank you so much for having me, Jyoti. I'm so excited to be here on this podcast and to share my story. Thank you for giving me the space to do so.
Of course. I actually can't wait to hear all about it because, first of all, being born in Singapore and moving to Vancouver and being Indian, I mean... I thought it was difficult enough for me, you know, being born in India and then moving to the US. But for you, it's almost like having three identities.
That's so true, the way you put it. And I think growing up gave me the sense of being very different. I looked Indian. I had long hair and it was tied up in a braid all the time. And my family looked Indian, but then I had this Singaporean accent and voice and it was very jarring for people.
Yeah. And
growing up, it was, you know, I was bullied for like my voice and my accent and all of that. So you kind of adjusted quickly. And then as I made a lot of friends with other Punjabi people here in Vancouver, I realized, oh my gosh, even at home, I'm so different. Like they would be eating roti and dal and I'm at home eating like noodles and spicy food. And it was very jarring. I'm very like grateful to be different now and own that. But I think growing up, I felt very, very different.
You know, I can sort of relate because I initially had moved from India to New York and then from New York to Seattle. And the 2 years that I stayed in New York, I somehow picked up this New York accent.
Right.
So when I moved to Seattle, it was like I still had the Indian accent, but then now I had this New York accent as well. And people were just like, where the heck are you from? But, you know, I always feel that... it takes time to come to your own.
Yeah.
But it's like the experiences that we go through that really make us who we are.
That's so true. And it's interesting because I have two older sisters and a younger brother. Mm. So my two older sisters, they grew up initially in Singapore, surrounded by all of our family there and really like living completely different life. Whereas I primarily grew up here in Vancouver, Canada. So even though we're in the same family and the same parents, we have such different upbringings and different environments that we grew up in that made us who we are today.
Yeah. And I wonder the experiences that you went through, how did they affect the choices that you've made?
That's such a good question. I think that feeling of being different and, you know, kind of embodying like the Canadian value system allowed me to be free, a lot freer than if I compare myself maybe to my sisters and how they grew up. So I grew up away from our extended family and I really had to look for my own community and my own family, which became outside of my immediate family, became my friends group. And that really shaped who I was. I didn't have grandparents, you know, in my daily life kind of giving me those traditional values, if you will. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I felt more free to kind of explore who I was and be more outgoing and kind of just live life on my own terms a little bit. I think that was a big part of it, is not having that like traditional system of like my grandparents with me every day. And
yeah. And so many Canadians have that, right?
Yes, because, that's true. Yeah.
You know, so many Canadians do have grandparents living with them, yeah, and being partly raised by them,
yeah,
which does to a large extent shape who you are as a person.
Because it shapes your parents as well, right? Yeah. Like they are growing up with their parents right there with them. And I think for me, I could see that my parents had a little bit of independence, and then that kind of transferred down to me and how I grew up and what I decided to do.
Yeah. So tell me, so you went to school in Vancouver, and then when did you decide that you wanted to host a TV show?
Yeah.
Or music videos? What came first?
I think what had happened was that sense of wanting to really explore the Punjabi side of me. You know, I would see all my friends and I'd be at their house and realized, oh no, my Punjabi is not as good as theirs. And I don't know all the lyrics to these songs. And I'd ask my friend to translate line by line, like the different Bhangra songs, so that I could kind of learn and understand more. And my parents tried. They would try and speak Punjabi to me at home. But day to day, if you're not practicing it as much, you kind of forget.
Yeah.
So I really tried to initially like explore that side of the culture. So in university, I joined a Bhangra team. And I joined that Bhangra team with my two elder sisters. And that kind of got me started on this living life publicly a little bit, because you are a little bit visible when at that point when you are on a dance team and you're going to so many different cities, meeting so many new people. And I started to help host and volunteer and do all of these things on a more public basis, getting to know so many different people. And from there, one of the other Bhangra dancers had a TV show and asked me to host it. So I think already kind of putting myself in that environment where so many people would get to know you, all these other young Punjabi or South Asian people on other Bhangra dance teams, they knew, okay, this is Shireen. She's on this dance team and she enjoys doing XYZ. So that's how I kind of got my start on TV. And this was before, like, you know, this was very much before YouTube and social media. It was the kind of a YouTube style show, actually. It was very different from all of the other Punjabi shows that were on TV at the time. Mm-hmm. There was like a skit section and comedy, and then there would be songs as well. So I was primarily hosting the song section, but this show ran on TV for over 10 years. So a lot of people in Vancouver got to know me and still know me today from that TV show.
They
recognize me from that show.
Yeah. Wow. How exciting.
Yeah.
And what was it like telling your parents you wanted to do this?
That is interesting, because I think because I was that Canadian girl to them, they kind of already knew that I was a little bit different and were maybe more accepting of me doing this than my sisters, for example. So they always knew that I wanted to kind of like be out there, and I was very outgoing and bubbly. And I think for them, they just wanted to make sure that I was going to manage my school at the same time. And there was a little bit of protective nature from them. They would always, even for Bhangra, they liked that I was doing it, but my sisters were there with me. So there was always that guardianship and kind of protection there.
Yeah. You know, one thing you said early on, which, you know, I'm thinking may have had something to do with their wholehearted acceptance, is the fact that they had this independence now, right? From their parents.
So, that's true. Yeah.
So then, you know, it's once you experience it, then you want that for your kids as well.
So true. Yeah. And as a parent now, I can kind of understand how you parent your children differently, right? Based on who you are. So I think for them initially, when they're parenting my sisters, it's a very different environment. now they're in a new country and they had some freedom and independence. And so I was able to kind of gain that as well.
Yeah, you benefited from it.
I benefited. Yeah.
And also, I think being the third child, you know, by then, the first two have already paved the way a little bit for you, right?
Yeah. I find it interesting because with my two older sisters, and they said this in their speeches at my wedding as well, they said that I kind of pushed them into doing things. So because I wanted to join the Bhangra team, I actually signed my sisters up first. I'm like, you go audition, you join this team, and then I can follow along. So I kind of pushed them into doing certain things as well so that they could pave that path for me. And then I could kind of tag along as the little sister.
Very clever, I must say. So how did the music videos come about? Now, I happen to know that you're actually in a video. It's Diljit's video.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Oh, that I was on the TV show and then I was in on the Bhangra team. And through that, honestly, I just met so many amazing people that would be doing their own, you know, cool things. Some of them today are famous, like we knew from school or from that environment. They are world famous people today. So I think it was such a great opportunity for me and kind of became a theme of my life of I looked at being visible as like a superpower, as a benefit, because if I wasn't visible, who was going to see me and kind of give those opportunities? Mm-hmm. So in this sense, for Diljit, I actually just got a message on Facebook from someone I knew through Bhangra. And they were like, hey, do you know, at this time, it was a while ago. So he wasn't as famous as he is today. He was still a big deal. They asked if I wanted to be in his video. I didn't know too much about what I was kind of getting myself into, but I had some concerns in my head. You know, what are they going to make me wear? What kind of lyrics are going to be in the song? You know, is it going to be okay? So I talked to my parents about it, and I think they thought maybe it was going to be more Bhangra oriented. Like maybe I'd have to do I was a backup and doing Bhangra or something.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if they fully realize I'm going to be the girl in the video. So in any case, I said yes. They said, okay, that's fine. And it was such a great experience to meet him. Even from then, he was so professional, so kind, so funny. And I had 2 or 3 days of shoot with him. And it's interesting because at that time, I thought I was more confident than I was. I had that imposter syndrome feeling inside. I thought, you know, I would show up on set and the director and Diljit would take one look at me and go, why did you pick this girl? You know, like send her home. She's not pretty enough, good looking enough. So I had this fear inside and I still kind of showed up and the director had this tone of surprise at one point when he saw me on his screen, on his camera. And he said, actually, you're looking pretty good. And I was like, oh, actually, oh, good. I'm so glad. And it kind of boosted my confidence. And, you know, it was very professional. Everything was so nice and welcoming and friendly on set. And the part that I never really shared with anyone was after the fact, after I did that video, and I had done a few other videos for a few other Punjabi artists as well, like a background in Harbhajan Mann's video. And I would do all these, I would try and get myself out there as much as I could. But after I shot with Diljit, he had a hit song called Do You Know with a beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. And that really impacted my confidence. I started questioning, oh, I got so far to do this video, but I didn't get that hit song. You know, this other girl got this hit. I started comparing myself and getting really down on myself. And from there, I kind of decided to take a break from the acting and the music stuff that I was trying to do and kind of focus on corporate life and my career.
Okay.
And that ultimately led me to moving abroad, which was always also a big dream that I had. So it's funny how life kind of takes you down different paths. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I love is that you weren't afraid to make these choices. As a South Asian woman, it's not easy. you know, it's great that your parents supported you, which unfortunately not a lot of South Asian women have, you know. Yeah. It's changing a little bit, but still there's always that issue. And then aside from that, it's like you're saying, that fear of the unknown, right, and conquering that and making these bold choices. It's remarkable, really.
Thank you.
But I want to know more about the corporate side. So what did you decide to get into after the music videos?
Yeah. Well, actually, before we jump into that, with the something you just reminded me about is kind of the fear. I would feel that internal pressure and internal shame still, even though my parents were quite accepting, more so than so many other families. I still lived in the community, you know, my friends' parents and their opinions still mattered to me. So going to their house sometimes, and one of my friend's little brother said, "Oh, Shireen, I saw you in this music video," and he started singing the song. And I don't know why I felt a bit ashamed, embarrassed. Like I felt, oh no, don't, you know, in front of your parents, I don't want them to look at me differently. So I would still battle those internal feelings of shame or pressure, even though in my household, for the most part, they were quite accepting.
You know, that's sad in a way, you know, when you think about how far we need to come as a community, because not everyone, like we were saying, is blessed to have the family support. But let's say in your case, you had the family support and still you encountered scenarios like that where you felt shame when really you were putting yourself out there and you were doing something that's really brave.
Yeah, I guess not everybody views it that way. You know, people kind of question you and your life choices. Why did you decide to do this? Or maybe even questioning, why did they ask you? What was so special about you that they asked you to be in this music video as an example? Or it could be magazine or the TV host, any of those public things. It is interesting.
I would say part of it is jealousy too.
It could be, yeah. Because I think sometimes when you look at someone else, there's a part of you that wants to be like, maybe there's a part of them that wanted to be visible and they couldn't. Something along those lines. And I've started to recognize that in myself as well. If I, you know, come across someone who's doing amazing things, or in the Diljit example, there was another person who had that hit, and there's something in them that you connect to that you want to be like. And that's kind of where you have to work on your own self-development.
Yeah. Yeah. And really look at it as more of an inspiration.
Yes. That's where we as a community, I think, need to do better, is to keep uplifting those people and using them as an inspiration, and realizing that, you know, just because someone else is doing it doesn't mean that you can't also do that. So sometimes I do think, you know, what if I didn't take that break, and what if I had just used it as inspiration? What else could I have done? But at that point, I think with the corporate stuff, I had just started a job that was in social media, which was really new at the time. So it was a new tech startup that was doing a lot of cool social media stuff. And, you know, it was a very cool environment. It was very kind of Vancouver hippie. You know, there was wood everywhere in the office. They had a yoga room. Everyone was wearing flannel and lumberjack. And I was this glam girl at the time. I had my eyelash extensions and long nails and heels every day I would be wearing. I showed up to this job, and it was really cool to see, oh, okay, there's something else that I'm good at as well. I found things that I was good at there. I found a mentor who was a VP at the time. She had global international experience as a leader. And I was exposed to all of these people who, you know, they love to travel. They love to do different things. They didn't have that community pressure of, oh, I can't do this because what will people say? They were just living their life. And that was, there was something so freeing about meeting all those people that I could look up to. And it was through my relationship with this VP, she saw something in me that she related to, which was that I had always wanted to travel and live abroad at one point. And so she actually presented a leadership opportunity to me of moving to London, UK. And I thought, that sounds cool. Even though in my head, I had never, ever thought to move to move abroad to the UK. In my head, I thought one day I was going to be a Bollywood actor and move to Mumbai, maybe. Mm-hmm, but the UK, okay, that sounds cool. That sounds interesting. And I remember talking to my parents about it again. I would all have those difficult, courageous conversations. Yeah. I think they probably, I wonder what they must have thought, oh, again, Shireen's come again to ask and talk about something else she wants to do. And I said, okay, I have a job opportunity to move to the UK. And that kind of gave it some gravitas, right? I'm not just moving for no reason. I'm moving for work. They could really understand and kind of get behind. And I remember my dad saying, oh, London's not that far. UK's not that far. And that kind of gave me that confidence of, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. Yeah. It's just a plane ride away. It's not that big of a deal. So that really kind of gave me that boost. And despite, you know, having a job lined up or having family, we're Indian, there's always somebody who lives somewhere, right? Yeah. I had family in family in the UK, but I was still going to be alone there and living on my own. And really, that was a big kind of personal development opportunity for me, moving away from my family, who I think another thing is you become so intertwined in our community, in our culture. Mm-hmm. A lot of us don't make decisions on our own. We tend to, you know, seek advice or ask. And suddenly I was in this space where I had to find my own place to live. I had to cook my own food and get my own groceries and figure out what I wanted to do in the day. And it was such a transformative, freeing experience.
Yeah. But I think you also learn about responsibilities.
Yes.
Being at home, you're kind of, as a AC child, you're just spoon-fed.
Yes.
You know,
100%. You know, your parents try as much as possible to teach you to be all of these great qualities, keep your room clean and all of that. And you do take it for granted. You know, you take somebody doing your laundry for you for granted. And being on your own, you really have to rely on yourself. You don't have anybody else to rely on. Whether it's, and for as from a woman, I'm suddenly in London, free, able to do whatever I wanted. But then you realize, oh, okay, I have to take care of myself. You know, nobody's going to be calling to check if I got home okay. I have to take that responsibility for myself. So that was huge. I wasn't going to just stay out late. I could maybe in Vancouver, but in London, I was like, oh, I got to be home at a good time because I'm depending on me to keep me safe. My parents aren't there to, like, you know, pick up and pick me up and call and see where I am. So there's so much growth in living on your own and doing that yourself. It really does. I remember the first time I got sick, I was like, oh, my mom's not here to look after me. I have to get in a taxi and find my way home when I'm sick.
Yeah. You know, I kind of wish that everyone would have the chance to live on their own because from what you're describing, that's how you develop your character.
Yeah.
Until you go through it yourself and you go through the day-to-day routine and relying on only yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you really realize what you're made of.
Exactly. And you build confidence in yourself through those actions. You know, the first time you have to navigate to go somewhere on your own, or because I was in the UK, I was able to travel to other countries on my own and do, you know, eat, pray, love solo travel. And I think I would never have imagined doing that before, or maybe my parents wouldn't have imagined, you know, that you can do all of those things on your own. So you kind of are showing them as well, like, hey, look, it's okay. It's safe. Like, the world isn't so scary. It is safe. Trust me. I know what I'm doing. I wish everyone had the opportunity to live on their own. I know it's not always easy. So I feel very grateful I got that opportunity. But that's how our parents became so strong too, right? A lot of them immigrated on their own and they had to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. They did. And it's almost like a rite of passage that a lot of us don't get. You know?
Yes. So true.
So tell me now, how did you meet your husband?
Yeah. So I guess going down, just to recap, I was that awkward Singaporean girl, you know, yeah. And then I was in Bhangra, that really helped me like gain that self-confidence and do a few music videos and then corporate life. Now yeah. I'm living alone in England and I met my husband through work. So
oh, wow.
He okay. was actually he's Canadian, but he was in the UK and was working as well. And we really became friends first. And I think that experience of being on my own and kind of having the freedom to explore my own personality, my own sensibilities and taste, mm-hmm. and then being in that environment where you're not looking at someone as their skin tone or as a potential suitor. Mm-hmm. It was a friendship thing. You know, we mm-hmm. got to know each other through work and then very slowly over time through that strong friendship and through getting to know the person, feelings developed. Mm-hmm. And I was someone who had spent a better part of my youth growing up trying to deep dive into Punjabi culture through the mm-hmm. music and the Bhangra and all of that. I yeah. never in my wildest dreams really thought I would end up with someone outside of my culture. And what I find so interesting is I see that in a lot of memes and TikTok videos today. There's a meme that says, oh, imagine marrying someone who doesn't know this line of this Punjabi song. Mm-hmm. And I grew up thinking that those things mattered too. You know,
yeah,
that I needed to be able to sing this song to my future husband on the dance floor. Yeah. So, and I guess I just got to the point where I realized that one, we still do that. I do still sing these songs to him on the dance floor. Yeah. He still dances. But yeah. two, marriage and finding a life partner is so much more than the songs and, yeah. you know, and you can share so much of your culture and learn together with someone too. So I think I'm very lucky that I got to realize that partnership, true partnership, is so much more than the superficial thought things that I was thinking of beforehand.
Yeah, because, you know, growing up with Bollywood romanticizes everything.
Yes.
Right? I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Bollywood, but yeah. it's just far removed from reality.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you think that you're going to, you know, meet Shah Rukh Khan and he's yeah. going to meet your future spouse. Yeah, he ruined it for everyone, but yeah, it's so different from reality. So I think that yeah. that basis of friendship and getting the chance to meet each other and understand each other in an environment where I didn't have to, I don't know how to put this, but I'm not, you know, immediately running back home and telling my siblings or my parents about it, where I feel like if I was still in Vancouver at the time, maybe mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been so open to explore where this was going. Mm-hmm. It all kind of worked out. I had this love story kind of blossom and develop abroad yeah, as well.
Which sounds beautiful, actually. But now I'm curious. So by this point, your parents are already used to you, you know, making these unconventional choices, right?
I suppose, yeah.
And they've gone with the flow up until this point. Now you come home and you tell them that you want to marry someone who's not Indian.
Yes.
What was their reaction like?
So at this point, I had moved again. I was in Toronto. So I had come okay. back from my trip to the UK. I was there for a few years on a visa, moved again for work. And this time they're like, okay, she's not coming back home, clearly, mm-hmm. right? She's mm-hmm. now, she's continuing to work and live abroad and do her own thing. She's financially independent. She has mm-hmm. her career. So there was a lot more trust established in who I was and the choices that I was making, I think. And on top of that, one thing that came up from living abroad is you're so much more intentional with that relationship you're making with your parents. Mm-hmm. You're speaking to them more on the phone about topics and FaceTiming and really like building those more meaningful connections. Mm-hmm. Versus I think when I was at home, it's nice to be at home and living with your parents, but we talked about how you kind of take it for granted and you take the conversations for granted too. Oh, what are you cooking, mom? Like those kind of conversations. But when I was abroad, I could actually call and ask questions and share some of what I was going through. So I think I became closer to my family by living further away. And I had a better relationship with them because one, I probably wasn't irritating them with my messy room anymore. And yeah. they could actually just get to know me as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful how you put it, because I think you hit the nail right on the head. When you're living with someone, you're more concerned with the day-to-day. It's the day-to-day routine. It's like getting up, you know, everyone's busy. And like you said, you know, you could get irritated. Your conversations are limited to what's for dinner, what's for lunch, or, you know, did you clean your room?
Yes. Yeah.
But then once you remove all of that, the deeper connection that you form is really through sharing your feelings, what you're experiencing, what you're going through. And now that you have this distance, you have to verbalize everything.
That's so true. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I found that myself when I moved away from home, you know, after I got married, I actually became closer to my mom.
Wow.
And, you know, we would just chat on the phone, ask about each other's day. And like you said, you have these deeper conversations, right?
Yeah.
And she would make comments all the time, like, your brother lives right with me and he doesn't know half of the things going on in my life, you know? So it's, in a way, it's beautiful, because I think so many of us fear that by moving away, we're going to become more distant.
Yes.
But that's not necessarily the case.
Yes. Yeah. And I had the pleasure of getting to know the rest of my extended family when I moved away. And when my immediate family would come and visit me, we'd actually do things together that, you know, if I was still living with them, maybe we wouldn't have done those things together. So yes, by this point, I had had more meaningful conversations with my parents. I had had a lot of practice, I think, telling them about things that I was doing, whether it was, you know, through growing up saying, hey, dad, I'm going to be doing this magazine shoot. Like, are you okay with it? And this is what it's going to look like. And I would always make my own life difficult by not hiding it and by actually having those conversations with them. So still, though, I had in my head this idea that maybe they were going to be disappointed, and I'm not sure how this is going to change my relationship with my parents, because I kind of thought, oh, maybe they're going to go, oh, see, you know, we shouldn't have let her go. We shouldn't have let her go do all these things, because now I had no idea how they were going to react. So I was nervous for sure.
Yeah,
I knew that my partner, my husband, was worth having that conversation, right? Like, at that point we're dating, I know things are serious, and it's not something that I wanted to be ashamed about and hide like a secret. I wanted my family to know. And so on one of my trips back to Vancouver, I realized, okay, I have to tell them. And the funny thing is, it's so difficult to have sometimes a one-on-one conversation in a Punjabi household. There's always somebody around. There's a million people. It's so hard to get, you know, just your dad by himself or just your mom by herself.
Yeah.
So I decided I was going to tell my dad first, kind of maybe rip the Band-Aid off and go for the more difficult conversation first.
Okay.
So I was coming near to the end of my trip, and I realized, oh my gosh, like, I haven't had this opportunity. I haven't had this moment. I need to sit and tell him. And it was on my mind this whole time. And finally, you know, everybody else had gone out to go somewhere, and it was just me and my dad. And he was talking about all of these different, oh, I have to put up this fence and I have to go do this and I have to go do that. I'm like, okay, I have to do it now or it's never going to happen. So I'm like, oh, can you sit down, please? Like, I have to tell you something. I have to talk to you about something. So I think he realized from my tone, it was serious. My heart is pounding in my chest. Yeah. I'm like, oh my goodness, how am I going to say this? So I just told him, you know, I've met someone and it's going really well and it's very serious and he's a really great person. And the only thing is, he's not Punjabi.
Oh.
And that's kind of how I started the conversation. And he was listening and, you know, he kind of asked me if I was sure. And he kind of just said, like, you know, if I'm very sure about my decision. And I said, yeah, I didn't, you know, go out of my way to, I've met a lot of people in my life and this is the person who I really found that connection with. And, you know, he's from a good family. And then I started talking about the family and kind of painting a bit of a picture, you know, of how he grew up. So my husband's family is from Newfoundland. His parents are lovely, you know, lovely people. He has two sisters as well. And I was just kind of of talking a little bit about them. So he kind of got the idea of, okay, you know, it's a nice boy and she's very serious about this. And I told my dad, I wanted to tell you first. Nobody else knows. I wanted to have this conversation with you first and get your insight. And he kind of said, you know, if you're sure, then I trust you, basically. Like he didn't give his kind of like, okay, but I found out later on his okay was there because initially it was just a kind of sharing that conversation at first. And then he went off to vacuum his feelings away. And I kind of went to my room. I'm like, okay, one's done. Now I have to tell my mom. So there wasn't that initial, you know, questioning of like, why, you know, why are you finding someone out of the community? It was more just a understanding from his point of if I was serious and if I was sure about my decision.
Okay. And at this point, he knew that he wasn't Indian at all, right? Because sometimes I find that, you know, they see parents like, yeah, they want you to marry, like if you're Punjabi, marry a Punjabi person. But, you know, they're still a little bit more accepting of non-Punjabi, but Indian.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
No, that's such a good point. Yeah. No, I said he is white. Okay. And I have to make sure I said very clearly. And I think he said something about, oh, I don't know if I want anyone with tattoos. And I'm like, no, he doesn't have tattoos. Like he's white. But I don't know what he was imagining in his head at that point, like a biker guy or something. I was like, no, he's so a very nice guy. And then I think I showed a picture and he just kind of said, oh, okay, okay. So yeah, he knew. And then later on in that same trip, I had to tell my mom and she asked me, you know, if he was going to understand our culture. And I said, yeah, because I think that was the thing is that at that point I had met someone who was so understanding of who I was and how I grew up. And I didn't feel at all that there was a difference in our upbringing or that he wouldn't understand my culture. In fact, now he's probably more immersed sometimes. My friends say that he's more Punjabi than you are. He's so much more immersed in the culture. He loves, he will go on his own and eat the food and all of that. And yeah, at that point she was more so concerned about if he would understand the culture. So I said, yeah, I think there's no doubt in my mind that he would fit in and understand. So I was so scared, but the conversations were so much better than I expected them to be.
Yeah. And I think to a certain extent, it probably also had to do with where you were at, like the stage that you were at in your life.
Yes.
Because it's not like you're in college.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You had gone on to have a career. You were independent. You had shown that you were making good decisions for yourself.
Right.
So I think that certainly helped as well.
Yes. Yeah. I think if I was younger and less experienced, there would be more concern maybe. I was really happy and lucky that I had that acceptance. And I think when I realized that it was going to be more of an acceptance was when my husband had come to Vancouver to meet. At that time, I was just going to have him meet my mom and my sisters and kind of leave my dad for after we were formally engaged. And my dad said, okay, good luck. You know, like hope this meeting goes well with everyone. So that's when I realized, okay, he's kind of really accepted
on board.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And what was that meeting like, the first meeting?
It was nice. It was my sister, her husband, the kids, my other sister, my mom, and we went to an Indian restaurant and they all met him. And I think the chef at that restaurant was like, what is this white guy doing with all these Punjabi people? He came by a few times to say hi. And it was nice. It was really nice. I think they got along right away. Mm. And now, of course, I have a son, I have a child, and my dad is just over the moon. My parents are over the moon with their grandson. Yeah. So it's so interesting because I think growing up, I had all these unconventional choices. And yes, I married outside the culture. And now I'm living 10 minutes away from my parents and I see them every day. So kind of came back full circle,
Full circle, yeah. So tell me, because you mentioned something about feeling shame, right? Because of the choices you had made as far as career-wise and then just, you know, from the community more so, right?
Yeah.
Eventually, obviously, you didn't care enough about it to still be able to do what you wanted to do. So what was the driving force behind it?
The concept of, I think, nazar is something that's really interesting. So I think in South Asian culture, and as a woman as well, there's always this kind of pressure that you shouldn't be too out there. And there's negative connotations to that phrase. Oh, she's really out there. You know, she's so public.
Yeah, she's in everyone's eye.
Everyone knows her. And I think what really helped me get rid of that burden, if you will, of looking at it negatively is that being in the public, to me, only came with good things. It awarded me so much opportunity. I met so many amazing, wonderful people through all of my experiences. And I just kept seeing the bright side. I guess maybe that is just who I am as a person, is that I would always look at the bright side of things. And I look back at all of the different kind of lives that I've had, and I wouldn't have been able to live any of those if I wasn't out there. So I think when I look at someone who is kind of hiding themselves or too scared to even post a TikTok, you know, some people are like, oh, I don't want the evil eye and I don't want to be so public. And all the time we're told to kind of like hide and not be so public because, oh, nazar and all of that. And I look at it in the way of, yes, there is sometimes bad energy, but you would be missing out on all of the good energy that can come your way if you don't put yourself out there. Even me coming here today to talk to you is partly because I put myself out there, right? You know my story, or you know kind of roughly overall.
Yeah. So I wanted to point out that I asked Shireen initially if she wanted to use a pseudonym. And it's because I guess we haven't made it very clear from the get-go, but most of our guests who have come on have chosen a different name. They have not used their real name on this show. And it's to give space to someone who just wants to be able to tell their story and, you know, just that's how they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And Shireen, when I asked Shireen, you know, what name or if she wanted to use a name, I loved, Shireen, how you said, no, let's use my actual name. So Shireen is actually Shireen, whereas all the other guests we've had up until this point have not used their actual name.
I had no idea when I was listening to the podcast. That's so, it's so interesting. Yeah, I'm happy you let me use my real name. I realized, I've had all these difficult conversations in my life. I've owned all my life decisions. Let's just own this story as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm so happy that you've chosen to do this because I think there's a lot to be gained from your story.
Thank you.
What I want to know is, like, looking back on everything, what's one piece of advice that you'd give to a young South Asian woman who feels different, or, you know, someone who's struggling to reconcile her identity with, like, the cultural expectations? What advice would you give?
Yeah, some of the, like, the themes, maybe you think you're making all these unconventional choices, and from the outside looking in, that person may think, oh, this person is kind of going away from their culture, right? They're doing all of these things that are opposed to what the culture normally dictates you should do. But doing all of those things actually brought me closer to my culture, closer to my parents, closer to all. Like, I think there's this perception sometimes of, like, you're a rebel, so you have to choose this unconventional path, but you can be many things. Like, you can want an unconventional path and then
still be very close to your culture.
Yeah. Still be traditional, still be very close to your culture. So
that's actually beautiful. I love how you put it. And actually, a question I wanted to ask you, something that's been in my mind since you mentioned, now you're a mom and your son, you know, has a biracial identity.
Yes.
How does your journey affect how you approach raising him?
That's such a great question. I come back to something my father sent me, actually. So this was, funny enough, going back to after I'd had this conversation with him and I had gone back to Toronto, and before I got married, he came across this video. And I think that it was a TED Talk from someone named Jessa, who is biracial. And the TED Talk was about how he is both, not half. And my father sent this to me. And when I got that, I also viewed it as a sign of acceptance. I showed my partner, I'm like, look at what my dad sent me. That's so beautiful. What a beautiful message. And that concept of being both, not half, like, always just stuck in my head of you can be so many different things. You can be all of these different dichotomies and be both, and you don't have to choose between one or the other. And that's kind of how I carry forward now in my son. There is a feeling of, oh my gosh, he's going to go through a completely different experience in life than me, of those challenges of being both and of him wanting to explore these different aspects of his cultures growing up, but very much carrying forward that he's both, not half. He's both white and Punjabi. And so he can celebrate in both, and he can learn from both sets of his grandparents. And there's so much more commonality, I think. When you look from the outside, you may not see it. But when I went to my husband's, where his parents are from, which is Newfoundland, Canada, there was so much similarity to how I grew up in Singapore, of this island culture and people who, you know, grew up in a very specific way. And it was so interesting to me of how my dad and my father-in-law, they're so similar, but they're completely different cultures. And I think my son will get to explore and see that. And I'm going to raise him as both.
Love that. Yeah. I absolutely love it. And I think you bring up such a good point. As Desis, we tend to think inside the box a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, what you said about making unconventional choices and still being Desi and close to your culture.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think of it that way.
So what's so funny is that I think when people look at me, they think that, oh, I've made all of these unconventional choices in life, you know, and so I must be such a rebel. And the reality is that, thank you for asking me to be on this podcast, but even before I accepted, I called my mom and dad and I asked their permission first. I
was really?
Like, yeah. I know. It's, I think just, I want to give them that respect, and I am close with them, and I am still quite traditional at heart. Even though I've made all of these unconventional choices, I now live 10 minutes away from my parents. You know, they're very involved in my life, and I want to ask their permission. And so I called and I asked if it was okay for me to share, because ultimately some of it is their story too. Their how they raised me, you know, how they reacted to what was going on in my life. So I wanted to kind of get their permission and have that conversation with them. And
that's so sweet. That is so sweet, because, you know, our community is really good at labeling people, like we were saying, right?
Right.
So to an outsider, because you've made this choice of marrying someone who's not Desi, all of a sudden it's like, she probably doesn't care about her parents. She doesn't care like about their feelings, about making them happy.
Right.
I'm just saying in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Because to be modern is to be disrespectful. No, you know, like, come on. Right. Like they just, I don't know what it is about our community where we are so quick to judge and to say these things. Whereas, you know, the fact that you are 10 minutes away from your parents, the fact that you ask them permission. Here you are, a grown person in your own right. You're a mom, but you know, care and love them so much that you thought to call and ask for their permission to do this.
Yeah.
You know, that speaks volumes, and that should really open people's minds.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I do care. And I think it's funny because it's a skill to have these kind of conversations. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's change management, in a way, if you want to go back to corporate speak. But to keep having these conversations is the only way that we as a community can grow and can change. So I love and respect them, and they have given me so much freedom, and I want to give them back the same respect that they were freely giving to me.
Yeah. And I want to hear all about this new project that you're working on. You told me a little bit about it. It's absolutely beautiful what you're doing, because not only are you using all the experience that you've gained Yeah. You're paving a path for so many other South Asians to have good, candid, like, conversations, right?
Thank you. Difficult
conversations with their parents. So tell me a little bit more about this project.
Yes. So I was self-reflecting on my journey and I realized that, you know, I have kind of made my own life difficult and have had all of these courageous conversations with my parents. And I realized that so many members in our community don't know where to begin. And they may have some secret desire or wish to change. You know, it could be something as little as they don't want to pursue the career that their parents want them to have. Or maybe they do want to move out. You know, nowadays it's more common to live on your own before getting married or getting that independence. And there's so many young people out there today that feel like they either have to hide who they really are, who they really truly are from their family and keep that a secret. And they don't know how to start and begin those conversations. So I have started this project. It's called Courageous Conversations. It's a cultural guide to members of, you know, culturally complex families where they can kind of start with a path on how to have these conversations with their parents. So it's so often in Western culture, we are kind of told that you need to set boundaries. You know, if your parents don't understand, well, set a boundary and distance yourself. And I don't feel that that is relevant in our culture. I feel
most of us. What are boundaries in our culture?
Right. Yeah. So that kind of Western therapy doesn't always translate into the reality of how we live our lives. And I think that we need more culturally relevant materials where we can say, okay, I don't want to cut myself off. I don't want to have this boundary. I want to share who I really am. And I want to be accepted both myself and from hopefully my family as well. So I put together this guide of different scenarios. Some of it is related to moving out or starting a new career or even marrying outside the culture. How do you broach these topics and these conversations with your parents? And, you know, what could they possibly be saying that maybe they're saying one thing, but really that's coming from a place of fear. Maybe they're scared that, you know, they're going to lose you if you move out. So really addressing all of these underlying themes that occur in our society and our culture and kind of putting all my knowledge and my lived experience in something that could hopefully help others as well. So
it's like a step-by-step guide, kind of.
It's a step-by-step guide, and it's really a framework, I guess, if you will, of how to, you know, broach these conversations and how to kind of move forward in a way that ultimately brings you closer to your family while still kind of allowing you to be your authentic self.
Wow. What a remarkable thing to do.
Thank you.
I'm in awe, seriously, to, you know, use your lived in experience and to do something that's going to help young South Asian men, women bring up these topics with their parents and to have something to reference. And obviously we know it works. You have an amazing relationship with your family. And
you
know, we know this is something that definitely works. And I'm actually excited to see it. I wonder if my kids will use it one day to.
Oh, that's sweet.
Too late for me now, but
probably we can put it in the show notes or something for those listening.
Yeah, I will be sure to include it in the show notes. So if you are someone who's going through a change and you're not sure that your parents are going to fully accept, definitely reference this guide and take a look, and I'm sure it will help.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I had mentioned before, we always end our episode with a golden biscuit. So I just want to ask you what you would like the listeners to take away, just a short golden biscuit for the day.
I think my golden biscuit is that freedom isn't always selfish. Sometimes it's necessary. So, you know, you are allowed to make bold choices and to explore who you really are and to find and seek that freedom for yourself. It is your birthright and it's human nature to want to explore and get that freedom. And that freedom isn't always going to isolate you. It can really help ground you. And it doesn't mean losing your roots. Everything could fall apart to ultimately build a better, beautiful life. So pursue your choices, be free to explore your personality, your interests, and ultimately live fully. I think it's necessary.
Yeah. And if you're afraid to take that first step, then just reference the guide. What's it called?
It's been work at culturally complex conversations. I've tagged it as courageous conversations.
Courageous conversations.
Yes.
Yes. I love it. And I can't wait for people to start having courageous conversations with their families.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on, Shireen. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Jyoti. And thank you to the listeners for hearing my story.
Thank you for listening to Rue. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at ruedaraz@gmail.com. That's ruedaraz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.